Good evening. I've been having a good time with this amazing piece of writing. Donna Lynn gave me a big document that was put together, I think, in San Francisco. There are Zen Center people in it, Mel Weitzman and Reb and Suzuki Roshi and a lot of people I've never heard of who have tried to translate this piece of magical writing. And it's very interesting because many of them don't agree. So it leaves us free to find our own way into it. It's important to know that. Who knows what the original writer had in mind with some of those metaphors and some of those images. But we can, as with any poem, enter it at any place and find nourishment there. And since this is about our practice, it's about samadhi itself, meditation itself, then with our background and from the place of our cushion itself, we can find ways of, if not understanding, resonating with the images that come through. That's what I did when I first, Coben told me to study this. But he didn't give me anything to study except the material itself. So I just, I tried to memorize it. I had it memorized for a while. But this was almost 40 years ago, so it's gone now. And found some real meaning in it for myself and my practice that was extremely valuable. So I hope something like that happens for you too. In the course of thinking about this, I thought it would be useful, especially to know who it was who wrote it. And actually, I wanted to introduce the one who wrote the Sando Kai first, because he wrote the Sando Kai, Sekito Kisen, in the 700s, and Dongshan or Tozan Ryokai wrote this in the 800s, and there's definite reflection of the Sando Kai in the Precious Mirror. In fact, in that document, they actually note where it comes up. Because the subject is the same. And the untalkaboutable subject is the same. The interpenetration of subject and object, of relative and absolute, the complete mutuality of dark and light, of identity, how everything is restricted by everything else, and at the same time, it's all of a part of it. Indissolvable, all of a part of it. So, Shitu was Sekito Kisen, and I always had a hard time keeping all these people straight. And I realized this week why, because you have the Chinese name. You have the original Chinese name of the fellow who just came to a temple, and then his Dharma name, and then his name after he died, because you're usually given some sort of fancy name after you've died. So Shitu And then those Chinese names all go to Japan and then have a Japanese name. So she too became Sekito Kisen in Japan. And that's usually how we talk about him. He is the one, if you've read the Platform Sutra, he's the little boy who showed up just before Hui Neng died at the age of 13 and asked a powerful question and became very involved in the practice and grew up to be Sekito Kisen, who wrote the Sandokai. So four generations later, Dongchan came along in the line. He met his teacher. So very wonderful stories about him and his teachers and his questions. His first question was, when he was a young boy, "Teacher, we always chant in the Heart Sutra, no eye, no ear, no nose, no tongue, no body, no mind." But he said, "Look, I have all those things. What does that mean?" And the teacher couldn't answer him. So that was the beginning of his journey and his questions. He had three students, two of whom were really interested in the five, what do they call them? Those five, what is it? No, not the branches. The no. Oh, here they are in here. So that brings me to this document. I think that they're in here. Maybe not. No. Five degrees is one of the ways. There's another word for it. But he created this practice measurement of showing the different stages of practice in five different ways that are based on the I Ching. And I will show you those. But the interesting thing that I learned this week is that Tozan had three students, and two of them really were interested in teaching with these five. And his last student, Ungo Donjo, in Japanese, was not. He wanted to carry on the Hui Neng tradition of silent illumination, and he thought all those were extra. It creates a lot of ambition, because if you think you're at one stage, and how do you know you're at a stage? But there are all kinds of descriptions of it, and it becomes a sort of science, pseudoscience, that can be extremely distracting and just full of ambition. So Ungo Donjo said he would go along with the other strain. So the strain with the five finally died out in China, but the Ungo Donjo strain went all the way to the 1100s to Zhu Qing, who was Dogen's teacher in China. So Dogen then took it directly to Japan. So even though we don't know who the people were in between very well, they've made up a list. It looks like it's really invented. But there was some sort of direct line coming through through China from very, very early, and by way of this Sandokai and the Precious Mirror teaching, which then Dogen brought to us, basically. Dogen brought to Japan and then Koban brought to us. I thought that was very helpful. So I found get back this thing again. Oops. I always do that. Thank you, Sally. I have a little piece about the Sandokai, because I think this would be interesting for you to read. And it's a little bit about the five ranks, is what I'm trying to say. Five ranks, which tells you right away what it is. If you've got ranks, then you've got higher and lower right away. So there's a little bit about him, about Sekito Kisen, and about the Sandokai, and then a copy of the Sandokai in here, which is a very beautiful poem that is very often chanted in Zen centers. And then I've got Tozan Ryokai and the story of his travels to his different masters and the various things that they told him and the various things he told them, including the eyes, ears, nose, tongue question that they couldn't answer. So I thought you would find that very interesting. So I have them all for you. Thank you. Thank you. So I don't recommend you reading it right now. otherwise, we can just go home and sit on a more comfortable chair. I did want to talk about the first lines of this. I don't know how far to go because I've never done this before. So please indulge me and help me because I'm feeling my way. So this is when he there was a sort of denouement when he got to final realization, and this is what he presumably said. The teaching of thusness has been intimately communicated by Buddhas and ancestors. Now you have it, so keep it well. Now you have it, meaning you see your own nature. It's not having some new thing. It's now you have thusness itself. You understand and experience your own self nature. So keep it well. Keep it well. Which somebody said is not only about taking care of yourself, which is what we're always encouraging each other to do, but to see that thusness, that Buddha nature in everyone. That's what our practice is. It's about how we experience the world we're in. So, of course, first we need to know how we experience ourselves. But that's not enough. It's also, how do we keep it well? It's by experiencing the truth and reality of things, just as they are. filling a silver bowl with snow, hiding a heron in the moonlight. Taken as similar, they're not the same. When you mix them, you know where they are. So this is the theme of the Sandokai, and it's also the theme of this poem, that things are completely distinct. Things are separate. Things are individual, undivided, each little thing. And at the same time, it's a blend. It's all the same color. So we can say it's two, it's me and everything else, but it's all one. But it's really two, but it's all one. So in Zen we say not one, not two. We really can't say. So then we have these fancy images of a beautiful bird in the moonlight and snow in a silver bowl. Those things that can be distinguished can be seen if we look carefully. And yet we understand that the heron and the moonlight and the snow and the bowl are all of a piece with the life of us. The meaning is not in the words, yet it responds to the inquiring impulse. So even though words can't touch it, there is no word that is really true. No word can really touch what it is, what anything is. They're really clumsy noises that we make with our body. And even though we're brilliant at working them up into incredible expressions, still they're just air and vibrations of air that can't really express even the simplest thing. And yet we have to do it. We have this deep impulse to express. And it's certainly our human brilliance. And maybe there are other animals that do it too, we think now. That dolphins speak and whales speak and maybe elephants do too. And maybe the smaller creatures do too in a way that we can't yet understand. Actually, and that's in one of the Enlightenment stories, the question was, do walls and tiles and bricks teach the Dharma? And the answer is yes, they all do. So that's an essential part of this whole thing. The meaning is not in the words, yet it responds to the inquiring impulse. Move and you are trapped. Miss and you fall into doubt and vacillation. And we do move, especially in Zazen. The mind is moving and moving and moving, lots and lots of different ways. And our body moves, and we're uncomfortable. and we're always adjusting. And of course, that's simple and natural. But if we're agitated and stressed, then that creates a different kind of way to be in the world. If there's too much agitation and stress, then we're really trapped in our mind. We can't really experience and feel and see where we are and how we are. It's like the time being that we studied with Dogen, that in order to actually the being time place is just where we are. And with agitation, we're not exactly where we are. We're all over the map in some way. And it is a kind of trap. And doubt and vacillation are just ways of betraying ourselves. With self-consciousness, which is just an extra thought. We experience our life and ourself, and then our self-consciousness is on top of that. We put a head on top of our head, they say sometimes. Turning away and touching are both wrong, for it is like a massive fire. A mass of fire is how I learned it. Nagarjuna was the first one to talk about this. He said, "Wisdom is like a mass of fire. It cannot be entered from any side." But he also said, "Wisdom is like a clear, cool pool. It can be entered from any side." And she too said, "The vast, inconceivable source cannot be faced or turned away from." So what do we do? Just sit in the middle of it. Just sit and completely accept. Sometimes a clear pool and sometimes a massive fire. Just to depict it in literary form is to stain it with defilement. He's taking a big risk here, since that's exactly what he's trying to do. So it's a joke on us. So I'll end with a quote from Pai Chung, another old Chinese man. "It is essentially not a thing. It should not be known or interpreted, and should neither be accepted nor rejected. Just cut off the two ends of all dualisms. Cut off the is and is not, and cut off neither is and neither is not. It is neither complete or incomplete in itself. It is neither the saintly or the worldly. It is neither brightness nor darkness. It is neither the knower nor the not knower. It is neither bondage nor liberation. It cannot be called by any name. To call it Buddha is to soil it, and to call it Dharma is to sully it." reminds me when I was a little girl and the ladies would stand around and talk about God, and I would be so embarrassed because it just seemed like you couldn't possibly talk about something like that, and they were just chatting away like it was just nothing at all. Something about words reduces everything to a thing. And he's trying to say that it isn't that. It isn't whatever we say it is. It can't possibly be. And yet here we are with some kind of experience that is crying to be spoken. So you make a song. Call it the Song of Jewel Mirror Samadhi. I think that's all I want to talk about tonight. There's time for some questions, comments. Ron?
I was totally confused last week when we first started it, and then I kind of looked at it a little bit on the internet and found it. And yeah, it's a song.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's actually a form of Chinese poetry that's called song.
Mm-hmm.
Then I started trying to reflect on parts of it. Pretty good for a few days.
Can you read the Chinese?
Yeah, it's not too bad. I mean, there's a few words I can look up, but it's not like really ornate. I was pretty, so I have a translation.
Yeah, but it rhymes in Chinese. That's what I've read, that it rhymes, it comes in two-line stanzas.
And the ending, but they've dropped them all.
I see.
You might hear them in Cantonese. But anyway, I kind of worked with it for a few days. Then I made myself too busy. But it's really interesting. I can see why there's 10 different a 100 different translations.
Oh, there are more than 10.
I just think about one line, like the one about the heron.
Yeah, the heron in the moonlight.
And somebody translated it, hiding the heron in the moonlight, but in the Chinese they put moon hide heron.
Heron hides in the moon.
Moon hide heron, and in the classical Chinese grammar, the divisions between parts of speech is a lot more loose.
Yeah, and understood.
Than it is even in modern Chinese. Not to speak of our language. So you could say, if you look, who knows.
Well, some people trans...
Moon hides heron, or it's just everything's light. Somewhere in this light is a moon.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Oh, and somebody said it was the heron hiding in the moon.
Yeah, it could be that, too. Yeah, the heron hiding in the moon. What's the subject and what's the object?
Yes,
it's a very kind of a deep metaphor. They're both white and white on white.
Yeah. Yep, that's the whole point.
Where's the moon and where's the heron?
Yeah.
So it's really deep.
Yes.
So thank you. I kind of need to go back.
Yes. Yes, I hope we can all do that.
A lifetime meditation.
Yes, it is. It is.
Finished by saying that this is an experience wanting to express itself, or Dongshan was experiencing an experience and you wanted to express it, and so the song came out.
Mm-hmm.
I guess my question is this, like, he's writing it for other people to read, and it's like he's describing it, so when other people endeavor to practice, they can, I don't know, I guess like with the Heart Sutra, you know, it's like a learning tool, so you know if you're not doing your Zazen right. So this is similar. So is it an educational tool in a way? I guess it is. I was also going to ask, is it like a koan? Is it supposed to shock us into finding the true experience for ourselves? I guess so, too.
I think that's more what it is than just being an educational tool. Since it's so magical, I think it was more an expression of his own experience that he wanted to leave for his students. And that's how he did it.
So his students could learn?
Yes, so they would still, when he was gone, they would still have some shred of him that way. And be able to pass it on.
I guess in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, okay, not try to rationalize this to really feel the poetry and have it speak to me, but how's that going to improve my Zazen, or how am I really going to experience that for myself? So that's where the question came from.
Yeah, it's not such a thought thing, but you play with it.
Just enjoy the poetry of it.
Well, you can dig into it intellectually, too, and see where that takes you. As well, you know, read it as poetry, as song, but also as someone trying to say something. So it's referring to Zazen, definitely. So it should resonate for us in some way about our Zazen practice. I think it's got all those things in it, probably more.
I was just reading about and he might have done some of the koans in one of the collections.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I was, you know, how do you read a poem? What does this image mean? You know, don't think about it.
Yeah, don't think it. Just let your belly tell you what it means.
Look at the image or not try to.
Yeah. Sally?
I just wanted to thank you for your explanation of the Chinese, because you say the subject is the intermingling and immutable nature of subject-object.
Mm-hmm.
They're separate, but they're one.
Yes.
And in the language, the translations are heron hides moon, moon hides heron. So it's the immutability of this language as well. So he's demonstrating through the language what the subject is. And so for me, that lit a nice light bulb in my head. But it made me want to read it in Chinese, which I can't do.
Well, I've got it printed out, and I deleted the English and put that in another file. I was thinking,
that's a great idea. Oh yeah, you'll learn a lot just doing that. Yes. Yeah. It's marvelous. Well, it's after 8, unfortunately. So we'll carry on next week.